All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, and I'm owner of Youngstown Computer and several other companies and businesses in the Valley. And so we picked this period of time on Saturdays to open up the floor to all of our listeners, those of you who have maybe aspirations for opening a business or growing a business, or, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurial spirit here in the Valley. And so we kind of needed a space to be able to talk about the things that we deal with on the small business end of things, the development side of things, the getting things started side of things. So not intended to speak over anybody's head. We use common language here to talk about things that apply to, you know, the inventor or the hobbyist or someone who just says, you know, I think business is my forte. I want to give it a go, because it's a practice like anything else. You get started in it. Nobody's ever really that good when they get started, through mentorships, with picking people out that are doing similar to what you're doing, maybe not the industry, but maybe the profile, the personality profile, or the skill set that that you need to wield in that industry, you know, cozying up to someone who's doing it. So that's sort of going to be the theme today, is being able to pick out your mentors, or the proof of concepts or the best practices, and then adopting them as your own. Now, later on down the road, it's absolutely necessary that you customize it and make it your own. So when I wander up to a new industry, there's lots of opportunities. I would say I get about 4 or 5 new opportunities that come through my door every week. And some of them are people that come in and they need my help, so they want to cooperate. Some of them are ideas that pop into my head, and I have to ferret them out and see if they're worthwhile. And then we have sort of like growth, where we see an opportunity to take one of our enterprises and make it bigger, where either we get new access to capital, we get new access to labor, we get new access to markets, and all of the above. And so there's no lack of opportunity. It's in infinite supply. So once you decide that you want to attract some opportunities your way, you make the public declaration that's what you're into. You start connecting with people to see and start talking to them about what you're up to. You don't have to overblow it. I mean, I made the big mistake when I first started going that I tried to act the part, and I started pretending like I used pretending that I knew the language and the verbiage, and I started to act smarter than I really was. And I got less cooperation and less people willing to help me, because I felt I came across as a know-it-all. Right. And I wanted to be accepted. I was a young guy that got into business. So I was always felt like I was behind the eight ball. Everybody was older than me, had more experience than me. So I was trying to assimilate and fit in. Big mistake. So if I would have just been honest and shared what I did and didn't know, I'd had a lot more of those people that would have dove in and helped me get started or thrown something my way. Business community is really great about that. It's all heart. I mean, most of your kids' fundraisers and charitable events are all backed by what small business churns out in the community, because we have a close connection with the community. The people of the community, we have to give back to. We have to support them because they support us. They show up and buy our products and use our services, and we reciprocate back, and we support those endeavors, and it's this great, you know, sort of like I'm not going to say synergy, but I'm going to say synergy. But it's this great formula that's just worked over, you know, all the years that I've been doing this. But now we're talking to someone who maybe wants to get started. So what did we do when you first wanted to, you know, get started in with technology? And we all did. I mean, listening to this this listener group, we're in our 30s, 40s, and 50s, right? So we weren't born into technology being in front of us. We had to learn it. So when we knew one way and we had to get into another way, what did we do? We maybe listened to a couple radio stations. There was a bunch of technology programs when I was a kid, and Screensavers with Leo Laporte. We used to listen to that dude all the time, and I would just absorb everything I could. I started reading books and taking classes and really just learning everything I could, right? And I wasn't ready to start practicing it yet, but I wanted to know everything I could. Remember, I'm the kid that 13 years old, I'm writing programming for video games, and, you know, on my Commodore 64, writing little text-based games. I already knew that I had a mind for it, and I wanted to do it professionally. I want to spend my time doing it, because I was doing it anyway, right? I was spending all of my free time doing it anyway. Might as well try to see if I can make a profession out of it. A lot of you hobbyists have the same mindset,
where you're, you know, if you're like, hey, I don't have to work and I don't have to go anywhere on the Saturday, what would you go do if you had the materials and the time to be able to do it? That's a good starting spot. Now, my only exception is if you like the hobby as a hobby where it's your escape, then you don't want to take that and make something that you really enjoy doing not fun by trying to make it, you know, part of your profession. But it doesn't stop you from dabbling a little bit and just exercising a little bit. You don't have to go, you know, make it supplementary, make it a couple bucks a month and put no strings attached. So if it makes nothing, it's you were going to do it anyway. And so that's like usually first step is to come up with something that you wouldn't mind doing. And a lot of you are picking your opportunities based on the opportunity and you don't necessarily like doing it. Well, it's like a little relationship, like it's your girlfriend. And so you're going to spend some time with it, and not all the time is going to be pleasurable, right? So you got to really like it in order to spend that amount of time with your new baby business. And so first step, like I said, is to come up with the idea and make sure you want to do it. But that second step is to go find somebody who's already doing it out there. Look at their lifestyle. Look at their schedule. Look at what they have to endure. Look at the benefits. Make a big list of pros and cons about what it is. I mean, restaurant operators, if you own a restaurant, you're working long hours, and it's not going to be 9 to 5 hours either. So if you're a person who likes to have your weekends free, probably restaurant operator is not going to be for you because it's just going to require something that you don't have. But well, let's just say you prefer the socialization of talking to your customers over dinner and working in the evening hours and late, then it's totally for you. But picking some of those early mentors. Now, most of my mentors were not on purpose. Most of the better ones were accidental, where I was, you know, thrust into an environment that I happened to be in and they happened to be in. And I'm not a very social person, or wasn't, I should say, a social person. So I was not real great at striking up, you know, conversations. I can talk to the people I know because I know them, and I could talk about what I do because I, you know, it's my wheelhouse and I'm passionate about it. But small talk is just not for me. So a new person, until I figure out like why we're in the same room and if there's anything that we could talk about, I just don't say nothing. It's nothing really against them, but that's just one thing that, you know, has worked against my networking ability. But you know, if I was thrust into the room and I happened to talk to them, or they talk to me, and I got to figure out like where they were at in their pursuit. If they were on par with me, were, you know, I feel like I was putting myself together for about 15 years. Like it was the longest building ever, right? Poor, working all the time, never ending cycle of near misses or near hits, and, you know, tragedy and panic on a regular basis. It was a stressful time for those 15 years. But, you know, I would say it was a game of 1 and 2%, where I never backtrack. Even if I fell into, you know, some bad things happening, I was always making progress in those 1 or 2% increments. And that's I got to where I'm at right now because of that persistence and nothing else. You know, if you were to gauge my progress or success at any point in those 15 years, and you weren't paying attention to me for like a 6 or 8 or 9 or 10 month block, yeah, it would be marginal. Like you would tell me, go get a job, kind of a thing. And I kind of knew, I believed in the philosophy. I knew that there were opportunities. I knew the infinite supply. I knew I was needed in the marketplace. And so just put on the afterburners and just kept peeling through it. Fortunately, I had an amazing support system at home with my family, and in the business community, I had people well ahead of me. And that was one thing. Like early on, I was trying to like pretend like I wasn't as far behind as these people. But then there's a certain point I just started to be honest and saying that, you know, where I was at. But having the people that were ahead of me, I gleaned so much just from being around them. And I was able to emulate a whole lot. Now, I didn't do 100%. I took pieces, the good parts, right? And I started adopting it in training. And I would say like you have the traditional track of going to college, and it might take you 4 to 8 years. And then you have the I'm going to put it together and assemble it myself. And it could take up to 15 years like it did, you know, on my end. So it's not any different. I mean, it's different, but it's the same thing. Just a complete, you get the same thing at the end, right? You did it the hard way, I guess. But it's the same thing on the other side of it. I feel like, you know, I look back every once in a while and say, well, couldn't I have just went and got a business degree or technology degree and just, done it that way and then, you know, worked for somebody and then branched off. And sure, it'd probably be the same spot I am right now. But I would have had a piece of paper at the end of the day. And if that piece of paper at the end of the day was valuable, then I would say, yeah, I wish I would have gone that way. But I don't think it matters much anymore. All right. So anyway, that's first two steps is coming up with your idea that you wouldn't mind spending time on. And number two is creating some mentorships in the people that you associate. So people that you do business with, your colleagues, and how you pick them. So if you have any questions, 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. I was asked about, right after the show last time, I was texted about a question about CBD. The question, and it's not verbatim, but a question was, with all of the energy that's being put into CBD, lots of businesses popping up, would it be wise to join the CBD train? I have two thoughts here. Now, yes, there is a market for CBD. They wouldn't be opening all around towns if there wasn't. So if your town doesn't have a shop that does CBD and you want to fill in the void, you know, go for it. It's a product that's legal. The consumers are, you know, trialing it out to see if it adds health benefits. And there's some people who are, you know, reliant on it. They have trust and faith in it. And that's in the short term. Now, would I put all of my eggs into the CBD train? Not really. From a practical standpoint, it's a health product, right? And it's a health product that is fairly new. And so it's going to play out one way or another. I mean, if the public think about the why people would buy a CBD product. There are a ton of nutrition centers, right? There wasn't a lack of places to go if you wanted to on a quest for having healthy things. And so it's not hard to get things that are good for you, vitamins and exercise stuff and healthy food and whatever. So it's not out of range. So CBD, I don't think it is a miracle where health foods are not a miracle. I just think it is another nutritional aid. And so I think in the future sometime, there won't be entire shops dedicated to it. I think because it's got an association with marijuana, that there is sort of like and it's new, so it's got that sort of a little bit of sexiness because it's got a little bit of rebellious vein in it, even though it's not, there's no chemical anything, there's no THC, I believe, in any of it, or if there is, there's, you know, very little below the buzz standard. And so that, again, going back to it, so I would treat it sort of, it was just another nutritional product. There will be CBD. It'll probably make its way into the vitamin shops. I don't necessarily think that there'll be whole stores dedicated to in the future. Now, if Ohio joins everyone on the, the recreational marijuana use where it's a legal thing, then those two things might join together as one, where you have medicinal marijuana plus you have all the CBD. I could see an entire store being made out of that because the demand would be pretty huge. And this isn't sort of like me endorsing it as a nutritional product. I really don't know. I mean, just like anything else, I've taken a couple of the oil drops and put it in water, and it helped me sleep, I guess, I think. And I don't know much of the science behind it. I have not studied it. But again, I've seen enough of the stores pop up around town that there's something to it. You know, I also see a lot of vape stores around it too, and it has its own attraction to its marketplace. Does it go mainstream? I don't know. I mean, I wasn't blown away by the use of the product. It wasn't something that I would, you know, go around and tell everybody they've got to try this. I mean, if you're having trouble sleeping and you want to, or, you know, appetite or whatever, I don't even know what it does. I'm just saying that I took it before bed a couple of times and I slept pretty well. Is it because of that? I have no idea. But if I ever have trying sleep, will I take a pharmaceutical first, or am I going to take CBD? Well, I'm absolutely a CBD. Even if it, you know, is only loosely associated with the good sleep, I'm going to do it again if I have that challenge, because I am a health guy, and the less amount of like artificial concocted stuff that I could put in my body, the absolute better. And I'm one that doesn't like taking, you know, Tylenol, I don't like taking, you know, pain medicines. I don't like taking any medicines. I went 2 years without taking a single pill. And it was sort of something I was very proud of, that every time I got a headache, I didn't go take a pill. I tried to figure out why I had a headache and stop doing whatever caused me the headache. And I put all of my effort into the prevention side. So if it was a terrible diet, I changed my diet. If I didn't get enough sleep, I got more sleep. I don't know why I'm on this rampage when it comes to a business show, but I'm just sharing my opinion about CBD and why I think maybe the placement of it, you know, from a regular consumer and not bought in because it's new. I mean, everybody sees when you go past the rallies that just got installed, lines around lines out the door and onto the street. But after they've been there for a couple months, the newness wears off of it and it just becomes part of normal business. That's what'll happen with CBD. Maybe a little bit slower than that, but that's what'll happen. Dave, I see you out there. As soon as we get back from this break, I will take this call. The phone number, 330-729-9977, or you can text at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier. 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. We're going to go to Dave. Dave, you're on the Bottom Line Business Show. How can I help you?
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I had an issue with my thumbs, and I don't know what happened to but I'm a retail merchandiser, and I'm always, like, stocking shelves. And I was bragging one day, my right thumb, I broke it when I was a kid, never hurts. But my left thumb is always sore. I'm sure I probably have some kind of arthritis in it. But then all of a sudden, both of my thumbs started hurting, and they both swelled up. And I never dropped nothing on them. I didn't do anything unusual. I don't know what happened. This kid I work with said, go to such and such a store and get this CBD stuff that I have. So I went and got it, and it was a discount store. I paid $16 for it. It was a cream. And I rubbed it on my thumbs. And I don't know, I have issues with my hands anyway. And a lot of times I'll wear cotton gloves to bed at night. But at any rate, and I also will admit this, I take 2 regular aspirins every morning because I think I have some type of arthritis throughout my body. Not real bad, but I have a little soreness. To make a long story short, I mean, I could not bend my thumbs in the middle joint there. I couldn't bend them, and they were swollen. Within no more than 2 weeks, my thumbs were back to normal. And this is about 2 years ago. It'll be about 2 years in August or September. And I don't have any issues with it. I mean, I don't know what's in there, the CBD, but it really worked for me. And I have other aches and pains that I put it on, and it helps. If nothing else, it's like you're always in a cream, and what I use. And it also helps the, like, dryness of your skin.
Dave, do you want to mention where you picked up your CBD? Just it's relevant because we're talking about the different shops and stores.
All right. Well, I went to what's the name? At Ollie's in Boardman Plaza, and they had a big, huge shipment of the stuff, and it was $16.99. Now since, I've gone to another establishment, Mark's, and they had stuff even cheaper. It was like $2.99. But in their their stuff did not have as much CBD in it. Like the original one that I bought, it had, let me read it here. I still have some left. It had 300 milligrams, I'm assuming, of CBD in it. And I mean, it was in a nice cream here, aloe vera and coconut oil. I don't even know if the same outfit still makes the stuff. And then it worked for me. Now, I don't know, may not work for everybody, but it happened to work for me. I mean, My left thumb is always sore because I used to be frozen food and dairy manager, and I stocked with my left hand, and I'm assuming that's what happened to it 25 years ago. But now they're fine. It's incredible. I mean, I still have soreness in my knees and a little bit in my toes, but I'm older too now. But
how old are you, Dave?
Stuff worked for me.
How old are you?
I didn't go to one of the shops. You could spend maybe $50-$60 for some of that stuff.
All right, Dave, thank you so much for checking in. Appreciate your input there. And so what it sounds like here is that, and he isn't the first that I've heard, that CBD, especially in its cream form, is pretty good for pain relief. And I have heard that before. I don't have any muscle or joint pain or anything to have being able to try. The only stuff I've done would be the stuff that is ingestible. There was a guy on Facebook, and if I can think of his name, I started following him to kind of see the products that he has in his shop. He's a CBD. When that question came in, I did a little bit of research to find out the people who are doing it well and what it was like and what the marketing was behind it and how they had to talk about the products and what they were. And I think most of the shops would disagree with the stuff that's distributed in retail chains. They, you know, there's a little bit higher potency or higher quality stuff that you can get in these shops. So if you're going to open a shop, you have to cater to the people who wouldn't mind forking over, I'm guessing, $25, $30, $40, even like Dave was saying, $60 for the same stuff that you can get at Aldi's and Mark's, even though it's not the same thing. So a lot of your narrative is going to be distinguishing yourself from the cheap stuff, because I mean the retail people jump on because it's a trending popular product, and so they have to put it on their shelves. And I don't necessarily think they're going to stock the stuff that they can't make margin on. And so, Dave, thank you for that phone call. I appreciate it. And if you're a CBD owner, if you want to give me a call and talk about the business side of things, 330-729-9977 or text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, and I'm your host. Talk about things that are happening in business and in with business. And open the floor to you to ask any questions that you might have. Oftentimes, people ask me about what is the big business sinkers? Why do businesses fail? I hear all the time that you have like a 10% chance of a business succeeding within the first 5 years of existing, and why is it so easy for a business to fail? I will tell you this: the formula for creating a business is not easy, and it's not like assured. And there's more wrong in every formula than there is right. So you got to think of business as not like you come up with a plan, and then if the plan is a L or a W, right? It's more of a blur in the middle. It's a little bit of both. You're going to do five things and two and a half of them are probably going to be wrong, or maybe even four of them out of the five are going to be wrong. So you keep the one that is right, and then you change one of the one that's wrong until you get mostly right. And I don't think anybody builds a flawless model. It's only one that is beyond the tipping point. So the answer to that question is, if you have a business that fails, it's because you run out of time, and you were on the tipping point on the other side where you had more wrong than right, and then it's just a matter of the wrongs capsize the entire ship. So it's just staying ahead of doing more things right than ending up wrong. But I'll give you some examples of things that kill businesses. So let's just say you embark on a business that has lots of inventory. You open a retail shop, and if you ever walked into a retail shop, everything on the store, on the shelves, is their inventory. They bought it before they had to sell it to you. So let's just say you open up a retail store and it's your first day. Well, you have to buy all of the product, or you have to get the product on your shelves, and that probably costs some money. So when you have to put stuff on the shelves and you have to buy it, you have to have enough money to buy it more than once, because you have these cycles of, just because you put it on the shelf does not mean it sells. So you put let's just say your inventory level right now is $1 million. And then so you open it, you get a loan for $1 million, and you fill your shelves, right?
Well, in order to keep selling, you have to have labor, and you have to have rent, and you have to have insurances, and you have to have marketing. You have to have all of those other expenses that comes along with it. So the chances that the money that comes in with your margin on the products that you sell is not going to allow you to just buy more inventory. You got to pay your expenses off the first go. So when it comes time to replenish inventory, you might not have sold the previous inventory, but you need what's sitting on the shelf to be able to fund the next inventory. So I've seen that more than once. A company just runs out of capital and they run out of short supply. So when somebody requests their services, they don't have enough stuff on hand, and then they end up missing on today's opportunities that they absolutely needed to pay the bills because they just had a lack of inventory. So having a lack of capital, we'll say, is number one. I'm going to connect it to the second one, which is buying or not being able to guess appropriately on what to stock. So out of your $1 million worth of inventory, you probably only bought 10% of that that's like really high demand. The other 90% is stuff that's going to sit there a while. So if you put too much of your cash or your capital into buying the wrong stuff, then it's gonna sit there, and you're either gonna have to liquidate it at cost just to free that cash back up. But you can see if you take the logic behind getting better at buying inventory is that you're gonna do it awful, so you don't want to overextend and pretend that you know what you're doing. You want to do maybe 50%, you know, only unload one chamber. And then as you see things happening, then you can adjust it so that you can backfill the things that you did well and eliminate the things that you didn't do, you know, quite so well. The number three is going to be death by opportunity, where you have growth and you can't keep up with the growth. So one of our first companies experienced just that. We had about 135% is what we averaged it down to of growth quarter over quarter. And what happened was that we only had staff that did not grow at 135% quarter over quarter. So what happens when you take on more work and you don't take on the people to, you know, or able to hire people in? It's slow in my industry. Technical, it usually takes us about 6 months to put somebody in and they are on their own. It takes us, the first month and two, you get very little production work out of someone in their first couple of months. Then 2 to 4, you know, you're really feeling them out. They're about probably half throttle. And then by the time you get to the 6 month, everything from half throttle all the way up to 3/4 throttle. And then you get to really see what they're capable of. So if you grow your company, if you have really good results with your marketing and you get a bunch of customers, and then that stuff comes in, and you know, us entrepreneurs, we like to field every response. We don't want to waste the opportunity, so we dive on everything, even if we have limited labor. So what's the quality of work like? What's the quality of product like on the other side of having not enough labor to satisfy, you know, the incoming, the demand? And so your guys, the people who are there, they get stressed and say, why won't you hire some more people, right? But if I would have been smart and I would have saw this month I had a growth, you know, I would have known what my capacity is, because now I know how to count things. Before, I didn't know how to count things. I knew what my capacity was. If I hire a person, I know what they can do, what's on the minimum side, what's where I want them to be, and what's way over asked. I can ask people to do things on the over ask deal for a short period of time, so like seasonal stuff, or there's an emergency, or stuff that's out of our control, but they can't stay there because they're going to get burned out and they're not going to be happy. And then on the low side, if you don't have any processes, then you end up getting 50% efficiency. And then all that really does is make it so you've got low wages. If you get high efficiency out of workers, you can pay them more. And then you have happy people because they're not overdoing it. They're right in that sweet spot and they're making as much money as you can pay them. So that is, and on the other side, if they're all spent and they're working on stuff they can't get to, what's it like from the consumer side? If they hire you to do job number X and you're like, okay, we'll see you in 10 weeks. How many consumers are going to be happy with the turnaround that you're not even going to be able to pay attention to them until 2 weeks from now? And so, you know, you brought in too many customers. You needed to throttle back what you did in marketing. And we were really poor. We're still pretty bad at that, is that we'll run marketing regardless if we need work or not, instead of run marketing when we need it and then throttle it back when we don't, so that we don't get, you know, the too many people on our boat and we just get sunk by our own success. So, and then whether or not you can price yourself appropriately in the market. So this is number five, I think I am on that list.
So I've seen people who either charge too little and they do a lot of work and they can't survive because they just have not been able to come off of their introductory pricing or their undercutting pricing. That's why I do not recommend anybody use somebody else's pricing and then go a little bit less than them. That is the worst thing that you can possibly do. What I suggest is you get an average of what people are charging and then figure out if you can do, you know, like let's just say, you go to one place and they're a buck. And you say, they're a buck because what? They're the least, they use the lowest cost products to put this in. So if I want something, it doesn't matter. That's what I'm buying. And you got the next one up and say, okay, well, they use a little bit different quality of ingredients. And then this one has great packaging and whatever. And I know why each one of them costs more. So you're going to join one of them. Do you want to be at the bottom where you want to see who can buy the cheapest amount of ingredients and get the lowest cost end product? Probably not. I've never enjoyed myself trying to be the cheapest of anything. And, you know, maybe middle, maybe top. Those are my two where I be. So in the middle, you could say, okay, well, I can look at what everybody else is doing. I don't want to just do what everything else is doing. I'm not necessary if I'm just doing anything that everybody else is doing. But if I can take something that they're doing and add value. So let's just say I don't like something in the marketplace. All right, let me pick something. Okay, so I don't like traffic, right? And anytime they do construction, there's always a bunch of traffic. So I'm going to market myself to cities and say, hey, I run Joe's Contracting Service and we don't do any construction during the day. We just do it on weekends and on holidays and in the middle of the night when your engineers tell us that you have the least amount of cars on the road. That's where we go. It costs a little bit more, but if you don't want to, we will run, you know, marketing so that your city picked it out specifically because they care about you. Boom. That's me being different. And I use this as an example, please. If this already exists, I don't really care. It's just for example's sake. But anyway, you pick something that irritates you or you think you can do differently and you go do that, be different, add value to it. And then you can charge differently than everyone else. I've watched people be overpriced for the same service where if I just take the cheap one and add a dollar to it, I didn't add any value to the product, just added cost to the consumer. Or if you have access to something, something's hard to get. I've watched this happen on Facebook. This is my favorite. This is awesome. So on Facebook around Christmas, the Xbox, one of the consoles, the video game consoles came out and they were in really short supply. So I had people that were going around buying up all the inventory they could at Walmarts or wherever they could. And then they would, you know, one guy got two of them. Maybe they cost $450 in the store, but he went on Facebook and said, here's your $899. This is in short supply. It's $899. And people were really not happy with the dude for juicing the price up. And he said, well, you know, you could go to try to find one, but these two I have right now that you can have, and the other ones you're going to have to wait or you can't have them at all. So the $400 extra is access to now instead of wait. And I'll tell you this, we were doing on the computer show, which is coming up next, we were doing a review on an Apple Watch. And we had it all scheduled. We made a big deal about it. We did a public version of it. Then we did one here on the radio. And I put one on order, which was expected to arrive before the show, so I'd have a week to be able to review it. Well, I got a shipping notification about 2 weeks before we did the show, and it said that my order was delayed and I was going to have to wait until a date that was after the show. So what did I do? I went out on eBay and I saw the watch that I was going to buy for, I don't know, $300. There's one of them on eBay for $1,000, right? So I had a choice to make. Do I wait until after the show and delay the show, or do I pay the $1,000 to the person that has one in hand to get it before the show? And of course, I bought it before the show so I could review the show as intended, but I had it hurt a little. It was a little pinchy to be delivered that. So you can't set up a business that injures your customers because they're not going to appreciate, or maybe most of them won't appreciate, getting dinged for $1,000. If that dude's like, hey, I got new electronics for you, I'm going to say, yeah, not going to buy from you ever again. Did this time, you got me, but I'm probably not going to do that again. So that's the cost of you know, using that scarcity mentality or model when you have something that nobody else has. It makes them feel really bad because they know what it should cost. And you can apply that to chlorine and fuel prices and lumber and all the other things that everybody's experiencing scarcity and shortages. Us in electronics, our costs really haven't gone up all that much, but scarcity has. It's been harder to get. So something that I would order before and it would take, you know, a couple days to get in,
now takes about a month to get in, and it's not coming in through conventional means. So I could probably get stuff quicker, but it would then my costs would definitely go up. So we just learned how to buy in our market further down the line. So if we sell, you know, four computers a week, then I need to have 16 of them, and that buys me a month to be able to replenish the fifth week. And then we've just had to get more and more ahead. And that's what I said, when you go through these models and you do stuff really wrong, you know, what's the benefit of only buying, you know, two computers in stock? Well, I create some pressures, right? So I have two, which means that gets me through Wednesday. If I sell one of them on Wednesday, then I have to order another one, and I'll have the next one, whatever. And that's a really, really tight window to get something done. Well, if I'm really good at it and my processes do all my worrying for me, no problem. So the cost of doing that is a little bit of stress and anxiety, and the cost of not doing it, buying it ahead of time, it just costs a little bit of dollars. So if I have more dollars, I use my dollars to buy time, and if I have more time, then I use my time to buy dollars. And that's just how you know, we've gotten better at, you know, from our side. 330-729-9977. I can answer your questions either on the phone or if you want to text me. If you just want to throw a statement at me, we had some callers about CBD, and I know people who use it are very passionate, and we did bring it up as far as we had a question early in the show about whether or not CBD was a worthwhile business to open up. And so if you have any input on that, I'd appreciate it. 330-729-9977 or text me at 333-1570. We started doing another business venture, and I'll share this with you because we're at the same spot on some of our ventures that a lot of you are. Okay, so the way this happens, the curve is that you have an idea and you throw it out there and you put way more time into it than you collect in actual money. It's still a good concept and you're building up, but you're gathering things. You're getting your math together. So we started doing movies in the park, and so we have all the equipment. We have projectors and we have outdoor movie screens and we've got speakers and we've got all of the multimedia. It's just a matter of going somewhere, setting it outdoors, inviting the public to it. People come down and they watch movies and they enjoy themselves, and it's a fun time to be outdoors and something that's really great seasonally for the summer. So we approached a bunch of people. We had the first customer was the city of Struthers. We've partnered with them for movies in the park before. So we're going to do three of those this summer. And then we did last night, we did one at Bridge of Hope Church over on Glenwood. And we set up the movie screen, the speakers. We even did one of our shows live in front of an audience. And now the deal is, like, I'm looking around and finding all of the ways to be able to cover costs. The way this works is in this deal is that you have the cost of equipment. Now, each one of the pieces of equipment, you buy it, it wears out, and you have to buy it again sometime in the future. You have to take a pretty good guess as to how many uses you're going to get out of it before you have to buy another one. And that's what you do. You take it and say, okay, what's the likelihood of an aluminum-framed piece of equipment going out? Okay, that's probably going to live a long time. How about a piece of electronics that I'm going to be setting outside, plugging things in and out of it every weekend, riding it around in a trunk and being transferred? Okay, that one's probably going to die sooner. So maybe I say that the speaker, I have to divide the cost that I had right now, divide it by the number of uses I'm going to get out of it as a guess. So if I take, you know, let's just say it was a $100 speaker and I'm going to use it, maybe I'm going to have to buy a speaker every other year. So in a season, maybe I'll get 10 uses per year. So 10 uses out of $100, it would be about $5 per use if I get 2 years out of it. So I have to put $5 aside of anything I charge to be able to replace that speaker. So the first $5 is just a replacement cost for something. Now, if you do this at the beginning, then you accumulate the money that you're going to need to replace it. If you don't do this and you just spend the money on things like marketing and whatever, then you get to the end and you have to replace the speaker and it just comes out of revenue. It's not something that you funded from the get-go. So that's on the cost side. Then you look at the labor. You go through it and you do the setup and you see if somebody else were doing it in your place, what would you have to pay them and how long would it take them to do it? And what would you have to do training wise to get them there? And that too is a cost. And then the last part is how you would get revenue from that. So in this case, when you look around at all of the cost associated with doing that, the end user is probably not going to want to pay the price tag. So you have to offset the price tag with other things, right? And in this case, the movie fetches $300, right? $300 gets it set up. Well, I'll tell you this, the license to play the movie is about $450. So them paying the $300 just pays the licensing to show an outdoor movie to a public crowd. So now you've covered most of your licensing fees with what you offer to the customer. But again, you still have, you know, the replenishment and equipment and the paying the labor and the rest of the licensing fee and then profit at the end of this. So you start looking around and saying, okay, well, people are here. What are they going to need when they're here? They're going to need food, right? They're going to need other merchandise they're going to want to buy. They're going to need beverages, maybe a rain poncho, maybe some food to eat, maybe some games to play. And then you start looking around saying, now I've got these people here and I've got some of my costs matched. Now you have to make sure that all of your costs get matched. And so we're spending a good bit of time going through the math about how best to pay for this and without making it so it's lopsided, where not so much comes off the city and not so much comes off the sponsor, not so much comes off the moviegoer. Anyway, we'll come back. 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. Thank you for listening. I appreciate everyone. We are going to take next week off. I'm going to be on the road. So you will not have Bottom Line Business Show, nor will you have the Youngstown Computer Show. So you'll get 1 week off from this. A couple questions here. Lots of valuation questions. So a lot of you young bucks out there that want to acquire companies, it's probably a pretty good time to do something like that. So if you don't want to go through, if you want to kind of short circuit or do an end around the learning curve or the, I don't know what to call it. So it takes, you know, a good couple of years to grow something up. It'd be nice to, like, when you go to the gardening center and you get a seedling that's already grown to a certain level and it gives you a little bit of a head start. That's sort of like what I see going on. So you have some undervalued businesses because of what COVID did to everyone, or in certain industries, I should say. So if you've got cash and you want to buy into a business or buy a business outright, you got to have a pretty good handle on valuation. It's the number one question I see put out to investors in entrepreneurs is, how do I evaluate this business? How do I make sure that I give you a good value? Now, I will tell you, just like my other recommendations, you need a good accountant, you need a good lawyer, right? Those are two services that will help your business function. Now, if you're looking at acquisitions, there is a whole segment of sort of, like, I'm going to call it banking or investment, sort of a hybrid between the two, where there's people who specializes in mergers and acquisitions. So they see hundreds of companies come through, some big, some small, but they see hundreds of companies come through, and they have a really good handle on how to value. Now, it's more art than science. There's different ways that you assess value. So if you're an owner, you assess value like you own a car, right? You're going to see all of the polish and sweat that you put in the car. If you're the buyer or the dealership, you're going to see the scratches, dings, and the liabilities. And when the two of you start talking, you find middle ground where usually the buyer is feels like they're a little bit slighted, and the seller, the vice versa, seller feels a little slighted, and the buyer feels like they paid a little bit more. And that's sort of what you'll find yourself into. We've been through a couple of these sales, and what we wanted and what we got, it ends up being, you know, less than what we thought it was worth. And in some cases, you know, the opposite was true. But I would really get in your back pocket a mergers and acquisitions person, someone who knows the business well enough to give you in that industry what is common or typical, because they're all different. Like, if you're on a construction company, is different from retail and how they value, how much is certain things worth, like book value or the things that you own, the structures and the vehicles and the equipment. When you add all that up to auction, that's a value, right? But what about your pipeline? What about orders that are just waiting to be satisfied? Or what about, what about things that haven't been realized on your, you know, on your revenue side? That's got to have a value too. And then you talk through these things. And I've watched negotiations happen on this where it's not days and weeks. I mean, it's months worth of hashing it out and considerations and you know, negotiations. So valuations, very industry specific. And again, I would talk to somebody who knows your field. If they don't do specifically, like I know one guy who manages the everything from a couple million dollars all the way through $100 million range. So if I asked him about, you know, a landscaping company that was in the $100,000 range, he wouldn't be able to give me much insight other than he would make an analog on a higher scaled company that was, you know, similar, and then see if the math, you know, continues downward to the 100,000, which usually it doesn't. And again, because the sort of like the barrier of entry for doing some of these low revenue deals, there's, you know, would a company come and buy you, or would they just start your own? So what could they get from you that they can't get if they just go? So if I've got $1 million sitting on the sideline and I just go buy all the equipment, I really don't need yours. I don't want used stuff anyway. And if I just said that I'm in the business and there's huge demand for it, I could just get customers without buying yours. They're not in, you know, low demand. They're, you know, they're I can get them tomorrow. So what do you add? Is it a special formulation? Is it something that you've patented? Is it, you know, a bunch of contracts that have that are built into the model? I mean, there's some value in every industry that's not just as it seems. It's not all just book value, and it's not all like potential revenue over the course of X amount of years. It's everything in between. So I'll always answer that question the same way, and I'm not scaping on you. I'm giving you really what I've seen go down. And, you know, again, if you're buying up businesses because you got some capital, one good thing is that you could probably, because there's plentiful, you could probably lowball a whole lot of companies. And out of 20 that might say no, you might get one to say yes. And I know a lot of people in the house flipping deals where they make a constant set of lowball offers, and they'll stumble on a couple of them that end up saying yes, and it makes up for all the ones that say no. So thank you for that question. I appreciate it. Again, we'll be off next week, but following this, we're going to do the Youngstown Computer Show. So if you have technology questions, right after this set of breaks, you can get those in. You have listened to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back.